From the Southeast Asian capital city of the Philippines, 7,107 islands in total, Manila, I'm Art Bell, and howdy do. This is Coast to Coast AM, whatever time zone you happen to be listening in. All 24 of them, and I think it is confirmed now, there are actually 24. It's kind of varied around a little bit. I'm more than honored to be escorting you through the balance of the weekend. It's going to be a very interesting night. It's an Ed Dames kind of night. People out there absolutely love to hate Ed Dames. It's kind of an odd mixture of emotions that everybody has about Ed Dames. You know, they call him Dr. Doom, and there's a good reason for that, because he predicts a lot of doom-like things, doomish things, I suppose you could say. That's really not a word, is it, doomish? It ought to be, though. Listen, the webcam photograph up there tonight is one of myself and Aaron, and that is Abby Dose. And we caught Abby Dose at a pretty good moment. So that's a pretty neat webcam photograph. You might want to take a look. CoastToCoastAM.com, of course. And listen, I don't just put things up to put them up. When I put something up that I think is interesting, it really is interesting. And there was a gentleman who went to visit the Vatican. And while he was at the Vatican, he had a camera rolling, a video cam rolling. And there's no question about the fact that he caught a ghost in the Vatican. He caught a ghost in the Vatican. If it's not a ghost, I have no idea what it is, but it certainly looks good to me. I have not over the years posted a lot of these, but when I post them, they're pretty good. I want you to take a look at this, and I would like your analysis of what you think about this video. It's a Vatican City ghost, and it is right now on coasttocoastam.com. I looked at it earlier in the week, and I went, oh my God, this really does look like a ghost. So you let me know what you think. Now, yesterday I read an essay on the war on terrorism, which got a hell of a lot of response. Boy, did it get a lot of response. I am told that Major General Dr. Vernon Chung is indeed a real person. The essay was not written by him. It was something he apparently came across, then forwarded to an acquaintance via email, thereby attaching his name to it. And you know the internet, inadvertently causing other recipients to erroneously assume he was its author. Who was, we don't know. Some attorney, we think, and something called a letter to my sons. So we're not sure, but it doesn't matter. It was the sentiment, the words, and the meaning that counted. So whoever did it, I agree. Looking a little bit around the world right now, in Baghdad, authorities on Sunday announced the capture of al-Qaeda's number two leader there, accusing him of brutal, merciless terror operations, including the bombing of a Shiite shrine. That one touched off the sectarian bloodletting, pushing Iraq towards civil war. Iraq's national security advisor said this Abu Human, perhaps, or Abu Rana, as he's known, was arrested a few days ago as he hid in a residential building southwest of Baqa. Iran, it looks like Iran is not making much progress. The UN chief got little satisfaction Sunday as the close of his trip to Tehran, snubbed by Iran's leader over international demands to stop enriching uranium and ignored the warnings not to incite hatred by questioning the Holocaust. Crouched alone in the silence of a locker room, a pro tennis player no more, a red-eyed Andre Agassi, twisted his torso in an attempt to conquer the seemingly mundane task of simply pulling a white T-shirt over his head. Never more than at that moment did Agassi seem so vulnerable, looking far older than his 36 years, wrestling not simply with his bad back, but also with two overwhelming and conflicting emotions. I know how you feel, Andre. I also have a bad back, and it continues to be bad for those who have asked. It kind of comes and goes, and I take Celebrex for my back, and it helps, but I still have really bad, bad days. A candle in an apartment without electricity, boy, those candles do in a lot of people, believed to be the cause of the city's deadliest and most heartbreaking fires in years now in Chicago. A blaze there Sunday that killed six children ages 3 to 14, some of whom screamed, "We're burning," as neighbors watched helplessly. The mother of most of the victims and three siblings were injured. Now, that is kind of a look at the bleak world, such as it usually is. It's pretty bleak, folks. In a moment, we'll look at some of the rest of the news out there. Man, you know, I'm very skeptical about these kind of claims, and I've been skeptical about them for years. But this one seems to have legs, traction, as it were. So I'm going to read it to you, and I think there may be something to it. Wouldn't it be a miracle? A man who claims to have developed a free energy technology which could power everything from mobile phones to cars, that's right, automobiles, has received more than 400 applications from scientists tested. I'm sure you've heard about this. Fox ran a big story on it. Sean McCarthy says that nobody was more skeptical than he when Storn, his small tech firm in Dublin, hit upon a way of generating clean, free, constant energy from the interaction of magnetic fields. Fascinating. I knew it would come that way. It wasn't so much a eureka moment as a get back in there and check your instruments moment, although in far more colorful language, said McCarthy. I'm sure. But when he attempted to share his findings, he says, scientists either put the phone down on him or refused to endorse him publicly in case they, well, might damage their academic reputation. So last week, he took out a full-page advert in The Economist magazine challenging the scientific community to examine his technology. McCarthy now says it provides five times the amount of energy a mobile phone battery will generate for the same size and does not have to be recharged. Within 36 hours of the advert appearing, he had been contacted by 420 scientists in Europe, America, and Australia, and a further 4,606 people had registered to receive the results. So, do we have free energy? Well, we don't know yet, and I guess we'll know soon, but this one does sound promising, and usually I skip over these, but this one really did catch my attention. There are three major storms now active around the planet, more developing quickly. Tropical Storm Ernesto, of course, causing flooding along the U.S. eastern seaboard. Hurricane John struck Baja California, put a lot of people out of their homes and a lot of people inconvenienced by not being able to get out of Baja. Super Typhoon Loke, that's the one out this way, has completely inundated Wake Island with 40-foot waves. After the entire population of 200 U.S. Air Force personnel were evacuated, Wake Island has a maximum elevation of 18 feet. So think about it for a moment. 40-foot waves. The island is only 18 feet high. Loke is the strongest Central Pacific typhoon in 12 years. It was the first time Wake has been evacuated in 30 years. Oceanic hotspots like the East Central Pacific, Caribbean, and most particularly Gulf of Mexico continue to be areas where storms can become dangerous very quickly. The storm had winds reportedly of up to 100, well, actually more than 155 miles an hour. My God, that's a big storm. It thankfully is not headed toward me out in the Philippines, but rather appears headed northwest toward Japan. How big and how dangerous it will be when it gets to Japan remains to be seen. But we've had our rainy season, and I hope we've seen the last of our typhoon season here in the Philippines. We had typhoon after typhoon after typhoon go through. It was pretty rainy for a long, long time here. Scientists fear that global warming will bring climatic turbulence, with changes coming in, get this, big jumps rather than gradually. This is by Fred Pierce of the Guardian newspaper in Great Britain. Richard Ally's eyes glint as we sit in his office in the University of Pennsylvania discussing how fast global warming could cause sea levels to rise. Scientist sums up his state of knowledge, quote, we used to think it would take 10,000 years for melting at the surface of an ice sheet to penetrate down to the bottom. Now we know it doesn't take 10,000 years. It takes 10 seconds. How can that be? Well, the article fortunately continues. That quote highlights most vividly why scientists are getting very panicky now about the sheer speed and violence with which climate change could take hold. They're realizing that their old ideas about gradual change, that would be the smooth lines on graphs showing warming and sea level rise and gradually shifting weather patterns, simply don't represent how the world's climate system works anymore. Dozens of scientists told me the same thing while I was researching my book, The Last Generation. Climate change does not happen gradually. In the past, it did not, nor will it in the future. Now, what they're finding is that scientists forgot about crevasses. What is actually happening is that ice is melting at the surface, then forming lakes that drain down into the crevasses. In about 10 seconds, the water is at the base of the ice sheet where it lubricates the joint between the ice and the rock. Then the whole ice sheet begins to float downhill toward the ocean. These flows completely change our understanding of the dynamics of the ice sheet destruction, said Ally. Even 5 years ago, we didn't know about this. Well, this summer, lakes several kilometers across formed on the Greenland ice sheet, then suddenly drained away to the bottom. Scientists measured how, within hours of the lakes forming, the vast ice sheets physically rose up as if floating on water and slid into the ocean. That is why Greenland glaciers are growing fast, and there are more icebergs breaking off into the Atlantic Ocean. That is why average sea level rise has increased from 2 millimeters a year in the early 1990s to more than 3 millimeters a year now. Soon, it could be a great deal more. Jim Hansen of NASA, that's the top guy on climate at NASA, George Bush's top climate modeler, predicts that the sea level rise will be 10 times faster within a few years. As Greenland destabilizes, building an ice sheet takes a long time, but destroying it can be explosively rapid, he said. Then there's this area off the central part of the Oregon coast, which is becoming a bigger and bigger crab and fish graveyard. It was first discovered back in 2002, but according to the Christian Science Monitor, researchers at Oregon State University have taken a close look at this coastal dead zone, and things are getting a lot worse. A few weeks ago, the researchers measured the level of dissolved oxygen in this part of the ocean. What did they find? Levels were 10 to 30 times lower than normal, down to 0.5 millimeters per liter, a characteristic of hypoxia. That's a lack of oxygen. Because they have no explanation about this phenomenon, they're still envisioning a total absence of oxygen. Here is the somewhat dramatic introduction of the CSM article. A half dozen scientists huddled in a cramped lab aboard the research vessel Akra, bracing themselves against rolling swells as they stare at a pair of TV monitors, images of an aquatic graveyard slide slowly across the screens. Some 150 feet below, a robotic submarine, looking something more like a portable generator with thrusters than a svelte submarine, motors just above the bottom, capturing macabre images of Oregon's newly minted and poorly understood dead zone. God, what a name, a dead zone. So they've got a photograph, which I cannot relay to you here right now, but they describe it this way. The zone is a bottom-hugging layer of water with oxygen levels so low that it cannot support a variety of marine life that typically lives in these near-shore coastal waters. The bottom is littered with dead crabs, worms, and starfish. This is scary stuff. These are areas of the ocean. It's not the only one either off the Oregon coast. There's others that are off the Louisiana coast and others around the world that we've found, and nothing lives in these areas, folks. Nothing lives. Nothing. There's not enough oxygen to support any kind of life that we understand, so it is all dead. Now, the ocean, it sustains our life. The ocean, well, we probably originally came from the ocean ourselves. So if the ocean dies, I've got this feeling that we're not long behind. We harvest a great deal from the ocean. It does a whole lot for us. I'm not a scientist. I can't tell you everything it does, but I have a distinct feeling that if the oceans of the world were to begin to die, we would too. Here's an interesting article. You all may recall the guest I've had many times about the God part of the brain. This article says the human brain indeed does not contain a single God spot responsible for mystical and religious experiences. Instead, the sense of union with God, or something greater than the self, often described by those who have undergone such experiences, involves the recruitment and activation of a variety of brain regions normally implicated in different functions such as self-consciousness, emotion, and body representation. The finding, detailed in the current issue of Neuroscience Letters, contradicts previous suggestions by other researchers that there might indeed be a specific region in our brains designed for communication with God. What it means? Well, the main goal of the study was to identify the neural correlates of a mystical experience, said study leader Mario Beauregard of the University of Montreal in Canada. This does not diminish the meaning and value of any such experience, and neither does it confirm nor disconfirm the existence of God. In the study, 15 cloistered Carmelite nuns, ranging in age from 23 to 64, had their brain scanned while asked to relive the most intense mystical experience they have ever had as members of that religious order. The nuns were not asked to try and actually achieve a state of spiritual union with God during the experiment because, as the nuns put it, God cannot be summoned at will. Joy and love. Nevertheless, the researchers believe their method was justified because previous studies have shown that actors are asked to enter a particular state activated the very same brain regions as people actually experiencing those emotions. As a control, the nuns were instructed to relive the most intense state of union with another human ever felt in their lives while in the Carmelite order. The study found that mystical experiences activate more than a dozen different areas of the brain all at once. One of the regions, called the caudate nucleus, has been implicated in positive emotions, listen to this carefully now, such as happiness, romantic love, underline romantic love, and maternal love. The researchers speculate that activation of this brain region during mystical experiences is related to feelings of joy and unconditional love, as the nuns described it. Isn't that interesting? Bayer Crop Science kept it a secret. What? That its genetically modified contaminated public food supplies, its rice, that is to say, was contaminated. The government was only too happy to help. Last week, the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced that the U.S. commercial long-grain rice supplies are indeed contaminated with trace amounts of genetically engineered rice unapproved for human consumption. The genetically engineered rice, also known as Liberty Link, LL601, its genetic code had been modified to provide resistance to herbicides and is illegal for marketing to humans because it has not undergone environmental and health impact reviews, and the Food and Drug Administration was field testing from 98 to 2001 under permits granted by the USDA, but Bayer Corp Science, the developer of the experimental rice, did not seek commercial approval for it. The contamination was only disclosed after Bayer notified the USDA itself. Currently, the government relies on self-reporting. Self-reporting from food companies to determine genetically engineered contamination rather than a federal testing system. The USDA dismissed concerns that companies might not always self-report or even be aware of their mistakes, which would lead to further undetected contamination or unapproved genetically engineered food. It appears a separate company, now listen carefully here, a separate company first detected the contamination in January of this year, and that Bayer may have known about the contamination since May, but the government was not notified until July 31st. It took another 18 days for the USDA to tell the public. Now, the Japanese almost immediately suspended any imports of rice from the United States, so it had fairly serious consequences. Japanese are not wild about importing rice from the United States anyway. They're very... what's the right word? They're very sensitive about rice. It comprises about a third or so of their diet, as does the diet here in the Philippines. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to do open lines for the next segment. Top of the hour, of course, Major Ed Dames. From Manila in the Philippines, I'm Art Bell. Oh, my God, I've got some very sad breaking news for you at this hour. The Drudge Report is... saying the following: crocodile hunter Steve Irwin is dead. You know the guy, right? Steve Irwin. I think he's been on Coast to Coast, as a matter of fact. The crocodile hunter is dead. He was killed in a freak accident in Karnes, police sources said today. It's understood he was killed by a stingray barb, get this, that went through his chest and reportedly into his heart. He was swimming off the Low Isles at Port Douglas, filming an underwater documentary when the tragedy occurred. I'm reading this just as I'm getting it. The Queensland Ambulance Service was called at about 11 a.m. That would be Australian Eastern Time. And an emergency services helicopter was flown to the cruise boat on Bat Reef off the coast near Cairns with a doctor and emergency services paramedic on board. Irwin had a puncture wound to the left side of his chest and was pronounced dead at the scene. Irwin's body is being flown to Cairns. His one report said that his American-born wife, Terry, was trekking on Cradle Mountain in Tasmania and has yet to be told of her husband's death. I hope she's not listening to this. The Irwins have two children, a daughter, Belinda Sue Irwin, 8, and 3-year-old son, Robert Clarence Irwin. So... very, very, very sad indeed. He was an amazing guy, a funny guy, an entertaining guy, an educational guy, and he's gone. Gone at an awfully early age, and the world will be a sadder place without him. So sorry to hear about that. Again, crocodile hunter Steve Irwin, dead. He did die, of course, doing the kind of work that he does. But still, the world a far sadder place because of it. All right, to the lines we go. What a shocker. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
The world's better with you, though. You're the best.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I hope so.
All the way from Columbia, South Carolina. I listen to you religiously every weekend.
Thank you.
I've been through all your struggles.
I've been through a few, haven't I?
I have a question. We just don't understand what is the year 2012, the Mayan calendar. What is that supposed to mean? I mean, are they trying to say that there's something to do with the end of the world or what?
Nobody knows for sure. You know, there are people who interpret it that way. The Mayans, for whatever reason, stopped writing their calendar at 2012. Now, that has a lot of people on edge for obvious reasons. I mean, it could mean that maybe it just means that whoever was doing the work passed away, or they just got sick of making new calendars. I mean, we have to hope for that. Otherwise, the Mayans knew something we didn't, and in 2012, everything just stops.
Something like from outer space, or...
Well, I wish I had more definitive news for you, but honestly, we don't know why the Mayans stopped, their calendar in 2012. It's a worrisome thing. But maybe from their point of view, it was long past when any of them were going to be alive, and so what the hell? That was enough calendaring to do. I don't have the answer, sir.
Thank you so much for taking my call, and just know that there's people out here that just really, really like to listen to you.
Thank you so very much, and take care. Yeah, I wish I had the answer to that. Everybody wants to know, why did the Mayans stop their calendar work in 2012? Was there a specific reason? I mean, they could have made a little notation there about, well, we're stopping our calendar work now because we're just fed up with calendars. We've been doing calendars forever and ever, and we're just sick of it. Or They could have put the end to worry us all, or it is the end to really worry us all. I don't know. Anyway, Mayan calendar 2012, that's it. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, this is Lori, West of the Rockies.
Yes.
Hi. I called your screener, and I was talking to her about when you had Dr. Ramakumaraswamy, the Catholic priest, on March 5th.
Yes.
The fellow that passed away, I guess. I didn't know that because I was trying to get information as to how to get in touch with him.
I had heard a rumor to that effect, but I didn't know it was confirmed.
Well, she said it's on the website.
I'm very sorry. Yeah, I'm very sorry.
Yeah, she said it was July 18th or 19th that he passed away because I really enjoyed him and I was really trying to get a hold of him. Do you happen to know if there's anybody taking his place doing exorcisms?
No, I'm not aware of it. And, of course, and as you know, there have been others over the years that that I've interviewed and that I've lost. And I don't know immediately that there's anybody taking his place at all. I don't know, in fact, who does exorcisms anymore at all. I think that it is being done, and I would very much like to be contacted. If there is another Catholic priest out there that is currently doing exorcisms and would like, I hesitate to use the word publicity, but would not mind being interviewed by like somebody like myself, I certainly would like to be contacted. And as a matter of fact, let me give out my contact information. I love hearing from all of you. And if there is another Catholic priest or one of you knows of a Catholic priest, Malachi Martin was, of course, another example. And Father Martin and I were very, very, very close. Gosh, we were close. We talked in private moments about things that I still cannot talk to all of you about because I promised. You give a promise, you keep a promise. At any rate, if there's anybody out there of that genre that would like to, would be willing to be interviewed, I don't know how many people like being interviewed, some I suppose, but who would be willing to be interviewed about exorcisms, there's a very great deal of interest in this in the audience, and so please contact me. I am Art Bell, ArtBell, at AOL.com, or ArtBell at Mindspring.com. That would be ArtBell, lowercase, at Mindspring, MindSpring.com. That's ArtBell at Mindspring.com. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Howdy.
Art?
Yes.
Yes, it's Robert in Toronto.
Hi, Robert.
Art, you are just a wonderful man. I've been listening to you for years, and I would just like to congratulate you for your move to the Philippines, and I hope you enjoy your life.
Thank you. It's called Turning Your Life Upside Down After Something Really Tragic, and I don't know, choosing to move forward. I've always been a wild one, and so here I am. It's a completely different world, I can tell you that. It's kind of like walking into another dimension. When you leave the United States and come to a place like the Philippines, you get off the airplane, I think I've said this before, and every sense, every smell, every sight, every feeling, everything is different. And so it's kind of like going to another dimension. Not quite, but close.
Well, we're just happy to have you back on the air.
Oh, it's good to be here, believe me.
Okay, I'd like to talk to you about time travels. I know this is one of the things that has always interested you. And I just want to put it from the perspective is that if we pick a point in time that we're leaving from, let's say now, and a point in time of where we're going back to, whatever time, where is this all in relationship to the expansion of the universe and where, you know, where everything is organized in space, never mind time? Because if I'm leaving Earth at this point in time, and say going forward to a destination on Earth at a, you know, say 1,000 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
Just where is Earth 1,000 years from now?
Well, hopefully, time space takes care of that problem. But I mean, you're absolutely right. Earth, of course, is in orbit about our sun, and beyond that, everything is moving. So, frankly, if you came back to the same spot, you might, more than likely, you would come back to empty space. Now, hopefully time and space itself in that kind of movement would take care of it, and you would land on the Earth of, you know, however many future or past years you had designated. Otherwise, you're trying to suck space.
Well, that's my point, and it's good to hear some wishful thinking, but at least it was a good answer, Art.
All right. Take care. Yeah. Time travel, for whatever reason, has been a lifelong fascination of mine. And for that matter, it brings up another topic. I know that there are people out there working on time travel. There are people building machines. There are people getting closer and closer to the possibility of time travel by various means. And if you're one of those people and you're really serious, God, by all means, contact me. And that brings up another topic as we lose those that we have talked with throughout the years. Boy, if you live long enough, you're sure to get see an awful lot of people leave this earth. But I'm still here. So if any of you out there are seriously working on time travel or know somebody who is, again, please contact me. That's the kind of interview that I really, really want to do. I'm Art Bell at Mindspring.com. That's probably the major one. You can reach me at Art Bell at AOL.com as well. But anybody involved in time travel, oh, by all means, here I am. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. I've been listening to you since 1985 at KDWN.
A long time.
Yeah, that's a long time. Before you got into the wild stuff. My question is, when paleontologists talk about dinosaurs becoming birds, they talk about their bones becoming thinner and hollow and they develop wings. If I flap my wings for a million years, I couldn't become a bird. Have you ever thought of having a paleontologist, maybe like Jack Horner, on the air to see if how they come about these wild fantasies?
Wait a minute. Hold on a sec. I don't think they say dinosaurs became birds. I think they're saying that birds are the last surviving representation of dinosaurs. They don't say that dinosaurs, you know, suddenly became birds.
Well,
but birds are as old as dinosaurs, so they're sort of part of the dinosaur family, and they're still around.
They talk about birds. I mean, dinosaurs developing feathers and eventually flying. This to me is just poppycock. I mean, you can't.
Well, it's poppycock to me too. I don't believe that.
Well, that's why I wondered if you thought about having Jack Horner or some other paleontologist on the air to talk about how the evolution of dinosaurs into birds or whatever they became, and what their theory is about how they became that way. Because, like I said, they talk about dinosaurs developing horns for self-defense. I can't develop a horn if I wanted to.
Well, why don't you try?
Yeah, be a good idea.
And if you do, I want pictures. No, all right, I'll take your suggestion to heart. Why not?
All right, I asked George. Maybe he'd get somebody on.
All right, take care. Sure. I think, though, that you've got it wrong. You seem to be sort of saying that dinosaurs became birds, and I don't think that's the way it happened. I think birds are just said to be the last remaining dinosaurs, not that a T-Rex suddenly sprouted wings and began to fly. That certainly is more than just a little unlikely. Let us go to, well, let's see, so many choices. Let's go here and say, I think from Los Angeles somewhere, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, that's correct. Jim in Los Angeles.
Hello, Jim.
I hear you on KFI tonight, but sometimes I hear you on the station that puts more in the air than Area 51.
Oh? No.
Yeah, for real.
Are you from the Pahrump area?
I am sometimes from the Pahrump area. Actually, we've crossed paths a few times on the phone, on the air and off the air.
Oh, KNYE, of course, continues the great tradition of oldies during the day and this program at night. It's a good combination.
I think so. Now, I was calling today to share something with you about the Philippines.
All right.
I know that a lot of times callers are asking you things about it, and I just recently discovered something that was worthy of passing along.
Fire away.
Do you enjoy ice cream?
I keep a constant supply of chocolate ice cream in the freezer. Yes, every night, sir.
Well, may I direct your attention to an ice cream product of the Philippines? I don't recall the brand, so I know there's no plugging involved, but it was made with cheddar cheese.
Really?
And
I don't know if that sounds good to me.
Well, it worked. I never would have thought of it myself. But
nor me.
No, I was with my lady friend who was a native of the Philippines, and you know she was pointing out these this stuff in an Asian store, and sure enough, ice cream made with cheddar cheese.
Doesn't sound appetizing to me.
Well,
I mean, I can almost imagine. I mean, if you imagine the smell of cheddar cheese and you project it into some ice cream, I don't know if that seems right.
No, I would have thought that it would be about as bad as taco sauce in ice cream, but it really, really worked. I mean, it's a rich dairy product in a rich dairy product.
Yeah, I'm a gigantic fan of ice cream, and sitting watching television, watching a movie or something at night, inevitably I reach out and grab about a pint of ice cream and down it.
Well, it may not be a taste for everyone, but it's something I just discovered, and I thought it was kind of neat to be able to
Wait. Have you tasted it?
Yes.
And?
Oh yeah, I thought it was great stuff. I wouldn't have suggested it otherwise.
Uh-huh. Do they actually call it cheddar cheese ice cream?
It's a queso real or something along those lines. But yeah.
All right. Well, I'm always willing to try something once, and so if it's Filipino, I'm sure we've got it here, and I'll look for it.
Yeah. In the ingredients, it really says cheddar cheese.
All right. You're on. I'll give it a try. Thank you very much. But I am a big fan of ice cream. In fact, right now I would say I've probably got about 1.5 gallons of ice cream in the fridge awaiting me. First time call? No. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. Tim from L.A.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, what's happening? The reason why I'm calling is because you were talking about how your back hurts really bad. Well, I used to have back problems, too, because growing up, I took karate, and I used to get punched, hit, and thrown on the floor, and I, messed up my back. And about a few years ago, I got hit by a big rig, and my back was totally messed up. But then I read a book by this guy named an MD by the name of Dr. John Sarno, and he was talking about back pain. And he said, you really don't need drugs or anything. And basically, it was essentially talked about mind over matter. And my back pain was gone.
Well, you're a lucky one, buddy. That's all I can tell you. My back pain was born originally of a fall that I took off a pole, and I came down on my butt and my elbow, and it impacted L4 and L5. Now, this has haunted me forever. I have good days and bad days. Most times when I wake up in the morning, I'm sort of bent over at an odd angle for about an hour. Then after about an hour, I'm just fine. Incidentally, John of Guam says, hey, Art, you're on live this afternoon on Guam. Normally, we record and time shift the show, but it's Labor Day today, so our afternoon drive team has the day off. Thank you, John. So hello over there in Guam. That's pretty cool news. I'm here in the Philippines where it also is afternoon. I'm not quite sure what time it is in Guam. It's about about 1:53 and 30 in the afternoon here in the Philippines, and I assume sometime in the afternoon on the island of Guam. That's really cool. So hi in Guam. And by the way, I'm looking for somebody on the island of Okinawa. So just in case the station in Guam makes it all the way to Okinawa, if anybody on the island of Okinawa is there, I need a favor by somebody on the island of Okinawa. So email me, if you would. Again, artbell@mindspring.com. Let's go to east of the Rockies. Okay, I'm instructed I need to take a break, so we'll do that and be right back. You know, radio's absolutely in my blood. It runs through my veins, and occasionally that happens. I totally forget to take a break. I get so involved in what I'm doing, and these calls have been so good that I totally blow off. And they hate that. You know, they really hate it because the commercials totally, so totally support this program. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art.
Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Mario. I'm calling from San Antonio, Texas. I'm a totally blind listener of your show. And I understand that you are a radio person through and through, and I'm curious about ham radio, and I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about how a person gets started.
All right. I see I'm right up against the end of this hour, so I will do exactly that, my friend. I'll come back and say a few words about how to get started. From the Philippines, I'm Art Bell.